This is a true story taken from an actual medical file. Medical File. Factual stories of the men and women whose vigilance guards our lives. A reconstruction of clinical case histories, step by step with the doctors who were there. Medical File.
To introduce our story this evening, I'd like you to meet a colleague of mine, Dr. Walter Simon.
Thank you, Melvin. The word drug, in non-technical language, has come to suggest a narcotic or habit-forming substance. But in the technical sense, the word has a much wider meaning. A drug is anything which is taken medicinally to help recovery from sickness, or relieve symptoms, or to modify any natural process in the body. So, in the strict sense of the word, even vitamin pills could be classed as drugs. Today we take such things for granted, aspirin for example, but most of the drugs we dose ourselves with each day are of relatively recent origin. As medical knowledge increased during the 19th century particularly, many new compounds and derivatives were discovered or developed. Some of them proved to be of great benefit to humankind. Some were useless, some were dangerous. Others, like a wolf in sheep's clothing, appeared to be benign or even beneficial, but were to prove enemies of society. Tonight, I'd like to tell you about one such substance in a story I've called The Friendly Enemy. It is the year 1868 in a small town in Moravia, which was then part of the Austrian Empire. A 12-year-old boy, who was to become one of the most famous men in the world, walks beside his father along the street.
Ah, it is a lovely day, is it not, Sigmund?
Yes, Father. Father. They're laughing at us.
Take no notice, my boy. They will stop when they see we don't care.
Oh, do care, Father. Why do they do it?
I suppose because... well, because they do not know any better.
It's on the pavement, you two.
Pavements for people, not pigs.
You stop that! Stop it!
Sigmund, be quiet. Be quiet.
Yes, quiet, Sigmund. Jews must be quiet.
Stop it, Father. Stop.
Be a good boy, Sigmund. Daddy says so.
No. Give my father's hat back. Give my father's hat back.
Give it back. Give it back.
There you are. Pick it up yourself.
Out of the gutter.
It's where you belong.
Father, don't. Don't pick it up.
It is my hat, son. I wish to have it back.
Could you, Father? Could you? To bend down and pick it up from the gutter. Not say a word.
My son, it is not important. It's nothing. Nothing to worry about. There are more important things in life. Son, listen to me. We are not a strong people. Not strong enough to fight. We must bend with the wind. That is our strength.
No. You're wrong. That way people don't respect you. They just spit on you. One day, I'll do something about it. Stop all this persecution.
And how will you do that, Sigmund?
To become a great soldier. Or prime minister. I shall make people respect us. If they don't, I shall kill them.
Sigmund, you sound as bad as they are. My son, you know, there are other ways to make people respect you. Better ways than killing. But anyway, you will not be able to go into politics or join the army. These things are not allowed for you.
Because I'm a Jew.
Yes, my son. But there are other ways. There is business, the law, or medicine.
So it was that Sigmund Freud, a
almost grudgingly chose a career in the field of medicine. He was a brilliant student and did well at the University of Vienna, but his heart was not in his work. He did not want to be a general practitioner, neither did normal hospital work attract him. Gradually, his interest turned to the study of the workings of the human mind, but this field was limited in Vienna. He soon realized that he would have to go elsewhere to learn more about his chosen subject. Then, one of those strange chances occurred by which fate suddenly tangles even the best-laid plans of men. Sigmund arrived home one day to find a visitor there. She was 20 years old. Her name was Martha Bernays. Freud fell immediately and completely in love. During the following days, he spent all the money he could lay hands on to send her flowers, cards, and letters. To his surprise, he found that Martha returned his love, and on the 10th of June, 1882, he kissed her for the first time. Next day, he went to call on her mother.
My name is Sigmund Freud.
Yes, yes. Martha has spoken of you. In fact, she recently has done little else. What do you want?
I wish to be considered as a husband for your daughter.
But you hardly know each other. You've only just met.
I agree. But we do know that we love each other.
Do you indeed? And have you spoken to my daughter of marriage?
Well, not exactly, but I think, that is, I believe she would consider it.
Mr. Freud, I am a widow.
Yes, your daughter has told me. I'm sorry.
And having no husband, it is my duty to guard my daughter's interests.
Yes, of course.
Then I must say that I find you totally unacceptable as a son-in-law.
But I...
You have no money, no prospects. And what is worse, you seem to be totally lacking in ambition.
I'll change. I can. I will.
How?
I'll get a job.
Where?
At the General Hospital. I'll work there. I'll apply tomorrow. You'll see. I'll do something really great. I'll make you respect me. I'll make the world respect me.
So, Sigmund Freud gave up his hopes of further study and took a position at the General Hospital in Vienna. However, this action did not seem to have placated Martha's mother, for she immediately sent her daughter to stay with relatives in Wandsbek near Hamburg. She believed that this would put pay to the undesirable suitor. To Freud, the separation was agony. He borrowed money to visit Martha secretly. When she discovered what was going on, Madame Bernays moved to Hamburg so that she could keep a closer watch on her daughter. By the spring of 1884, Freud was in despair. He was suffering from severe depression and violent stomach upsets. He believed, quite sincerely, that he would die unless he could see and be with his beloved Martha. He confided in a friend.
So, what are you going to do about it?
I don't know. That woman hates me. She thinks I'm not good enough for her daughter. Well, I suppose she's right. And not at all.
Oh, come on, pull yourself together.
There is just one thing. Don't laugh. Please, don't laugh.
I won't.
Well, you see, I thought that if I could become famous, she might change her mind.
Famous?
Yes. Prove that I'm somebody. Make her realize that I'm, well, worth something.
But you are. You're the most brilliant student here at the hospital.
Oh, none of that means anything. I've got to do something that'll get my name into the medical journals, maybe even into the newspapers. She'd believe that.
I see.
No, you don't. Not really. I've got to make some kind of scientific discovery, something new and important. Then I'm sure she'll let me marry Martha.
Yes, I suppose you're right. But why are you telling me all this?
Because I want you to help me. You're a chemist.
Yes?
Well, I want you to get me some cocaine.
Cocaine?
Yeah. You know what it is.
I've heard of it, but...
Well, listen. I was reading an article the other day. It was written by a German doctor. He'd given cocaine to soldiers while they were on maneuvers. He said that it seemed to improve their marching performances. Now, I hadn't heard of it before, but I've been thinking about that article. And I've been wondering whether it might not help cure people with mental illnesses. People suffering from acute depression.
I suppose it might be helpful.
But don't you see? This might be just the very thing I need. Can't you see the headlines? Young doctor discovers miracle drug.
Yes, but...
Can you get me some cocaine?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Good. I want a gram. It must be pure. And I want it today.
Freud obtained his cocaine, and he started at once experimenting on himself. He found that the drug did have remarkable effects on his mental state. His depression vanished, he developed abounding confidence in himself. One strange thing he did notice was that when he took the drug by mouth, it seemed to make his mouth numb. A short time later, he happened to share a table at the local cafe one morning with a Dr. Koehler, who also works at the General Hospital in the ophthalmic department.
Can I pour you some coffee, Dr. Koehler?
No, thank you.
Is something wrong?
I've got the most wretched toothache. Anything hot makes it worse.
Oh, I'm sorry. It is miserable.
I didn't get a wink of sleep last night, and now it's sobbing so much I can't think. I've got a lecture in 10 minutes.
Isn't there something you could take?
Oh, I tried everything. Nothing seems to help.
Wait a minute. I think I've got something that might deaden it a bit. Here, try some of this.
What is it?
Oh, just try it. Put a drop or two onto the gum. Yeah, it should help. I don't know whether it will kill the pain completely, but it should help.
It's easing it already. What is it? What is that?
It's called cocaine. It comes from a South American plant. Apparently the first specimens were brought back by a ship's doctor about 20 years ago. He gave the leaves, coca they were called, to the German chemist Röhler. And Röhler's pupil, Niemann, managed to extract the effective compound and called it cocaine.
Cocaine? But what are you doing with it in your pocket?
I'm working on it. I read about some experiments in Germany and decided to try some of my own.
Oh, how are they going?
Quite well. I think it's going to prove most valuable for overcoming depression and as a cure for mental illness. Why don't you come along and see for yourself?
All right. What about that numbing effect?
Oh, that's just a sideline. It's not of any scientific interest.
Koehler and Freud began to experiment together. For several weeks, they both took cocaine and made notes of the effects. In July 1884, Freud published a paper in a scientific journal. The response was disappointing. But for once, Freud was too happy to care. It was time for his summer holiday, and he was going to spend it with Martha. On the 1st of September, he boarded the train for Hamburg, filled with the most joyous anticipation. Meanwhile, Dr. Koehler had been doing some serious thinking. Unlike Freud, Koehler practiced surgery. He felt sure that this new drug had possibilities as a local anesthetic, but up to now he hadn't had enough faith to try. Now that he was on his own, he made up his mind. He would put his theory to the test. He went to call on a certain Dr. Gartner, who was a laboratory assistant.
Come in. Koehler! Oh, it's a long time since you've been to visit me.
Yes, I'm afraid it is.
Oh. Sit down. Now, what can I do for you?
Oh, I'm sorry, this is so obvious.
Oh, the sudden visit, the preoccupied manner. Yes, it's obvious. Oh, never mind. Coffee.
Thank you. Funny. You know, that's how it started.
What?
One day I had such bad toothache, I couldn't drink hot coffee.
Oh, really? And what happened?
Sigmund Freud offered me some medicine for my toothache.
I see. Sugar?
Oh, thank you.
And it worked, this medicine?
It worked.
Oh, and now what?
Well, I've been thinking. I perform many eye operations. They're difficult under general anesthetic and impossible or almost impossible without an anesthetic. So? Well, I've been wondering whether this drug might not provide a local anesthetic to stop the pain in that one area.
Hmm. What is this drug?
Cocaine.
Ah.
Now, I got some with me. I was wondering whether you would help me with an experiment.
What have you in mind?
Well, I see you've got some frogs here. Couldn't we try it on one of them? Put some cocaine in its eye, see if it works. That's all.
All right. Now, Let's clear this bench.
Right, sir.
You fetch one of the frogs.
Oh, from here?
Yes, any one of those will do. And hold him tight. They're inclined to make sudden leaps. That's it. Put him down here.
Yeah, now you hold him. I'll get out the cocaine.
How will we know if the eyes anesthetized?
Well, I'll use his probe. If he blinks and pulls a ray, we'll know we have failed.
All right.
Hold him still. I just want to put a drop in his left eye. Now, we'll leave the other one untouched as a control.
Right.
One drop.
How long does it take to work?
Well, the first signs start almost immediately, but it's about a minute before the full effect is felt.
The eye doesn't look any different. No, wait a minute. The pupil seems to be growing larger.
Hmm.
Yes. Look, there's a definite difference.
Right. Now, let's try. I'll move the sharp probe in close.
And the eye doesn't blink. He doesn't even try to move his head away.
Closer. Now, I'm actually touching the cornea.
Absolutely no reaction. Try the other eye.
All right, now hold him. Hold him.
Hold on. Well, that was definite enough. He blinked and pulled away as soon as you came anywhere near the right eye. Try the left again.
See? No movement. None whatsoever.
Nothing.
You realize what this means? It might be possible to operate on cataracts without giving a general anesthetic.
During the following days, Coller experimented on frogs, then rabbits, and then dogs. Lastly, he tried the drug on himself. His friend Gartner treated his eye with cocaine and then subjected it to probings. When he himself felt nothing, his last doubts were removed. He went to the eye clinic and persuaded one of his patients to submit to an experiment. Once again, he achieved complete anesthesia. The same patient then agreed to undergo a cataract operation under local anesthetic. Koller performed the operation in secret, and it was a complete success. A leading ophthalmic surgeon from Italy was visiting Vienna at the time. Koller invited him to watch the next operation.
Well, Dr. Breta, you see what I can do? What do you think?
It is amazing. It's truly amazing.
Yes. But now I'm afraid that someone might publish a paper before I can and steal the limelight.
Well, the Congress of Ophthalmologists is due to begin in Heidelberg in 4 days. I am on my way there now. Why not announce your work there? It will have worldwide publicity.
I can't. Look, I completely unknown. No one will give me a chance to speak. Not at such short notice.
I am due to speak.
Yes. So, no, I wondered if perhaps you might...
You want me to announce your discovery?
Yes. Yes, you could read my paper and perhaps repeat the experiments you see me do here. But then that would mean not giving your paper, and that's too much to ask.
Oh, no. In this case, it's not too much. Your discovery is of worldwide importance. I will do what you ask. I will tell the world about your work with cocaine.
Koller remained in Vienna in almost unbearable suspense. The days passed, and then came the announcement.
A Viennese eye doctor named Karl Koller has made known his discovery that the human eye can be rendered insensitive to pain by a few drops of cocaine solution. To prove his theory, several operations for cataract were performed with cocaine in the presence of the Ophthalmological Congress in Heidelberg.
Meanwhile, Freud was enjoying a deliriously happy holiday in Hamburg. He spent all his time with Martha, and even met her mother, who seemed at length to have become resigned to having Freud for a son-in-law. Freud returned to Vienna early in October, determined to continue his experiments with cocaine, win fame, and marry Martha.
Hello, Sigrand. You had a good holiday.
Yes, wonderful. What's this I hear about you using cocaine for eye operations?
Yes, I decided to try it whilst you were away. And it works, it works.
Well, we always knew that it numbed the mucous membrane.
Yes, but you've no idea what this means. We can perform all kinds of eye surgery now that we couldn't before.
Yes, maybe, but I still think that's a sideline.
Sideline? So Gracie's new discovery, anesthesia, for years, and you call it a sideline?
Well, it's just that I think cocaine has so much else to offer. In the field of mental illness, that's where its future lies.
Sigmund Freud worked on, but he became increasingly depressed. It seemed that his discovery was slipping away from him. Other people had taken it up, and his name was hardly mentioned. He tried cocaine on all kinds of mental and nervous diseases, and he began taking larger doses himself to ward off his depression. Today, it seems a miracle that he did not become an addict. Perhaps it was that his interest in his work was too strong. In any event, he was forced at last to admit that his idea was a failure, and he left Vienna for Paris, where he studied under the eminent neurologist, Dr. Jean-Martin Charcot. In September of the following year, 1886, he married his beloved Martha Bernays and devoted the rest of his life to the study and treatment of mental disorder, becoming the leader and best-known figure in the world in the new field of psychoanalysis. Meanwhile, other men took up and advanced the use of cocaine. They removed it from the restricted field of ophthalmology and applied it to all parts of the human body. Between the years 1886 and 1888, there was a worldwide use of cocaine as a local anesthetic and a general enthusiasm for the drug, especially among young surgeons. New techniques were developed. The drug seemed set for a bright future. But the shadows were lurking and growing larger.
Dr. Coller, have you seen this report?
Which one?
Here, on cocaine. In this technical journal here.
Oh, what does it say?
That cocaine is dangerous. Apparently, there have been cases of addiction. Listen. From America, it is reported that cocaine has produced nothing but misfortune for Dr. Halstead, several of his friends, and some of his students. When accounts of Dr. Kohler's discoveries were received in New York, Halstead became concerned with extending local anesthesia to other parts of the body besides the eye. He experimented on himself and friends and students. He had remarkable success with a new method he discovered, but then suffered a breakdown. They go on to quote a number of other cases of addiction.
Yeah, I agree. It's got to be used carefully. It does have strong psychological effects.
Yeah, but that's not all. This article says it can be dangerous to inject.
Well, I don't inject it. I drop it into the eye.
It says here that there have been a number of sudden deaths after cocaine injections, even for minor dental operations. It is suggested that doctors refrain from using the drug for the time being until further tests can be carried out. Pity. Looks as though your cocaine is going to prove a failure after all.
So, finally, the enemy had been discovered beneath the friendly exterior. In medical practice, cocaine proved too dangerous for injection, since it is an intense stimulant of the central nervous system. In large doses, it causes acute paranoia, and in many cases, a sudden, rapid, and fatal collapse. So the wolf was now in full view. But there is another side to the coin. Cocaine did show surgeons the benefits of local anesthetics in certain types of surgery, and they continued to experiment carefully with it until 1905. In that year came the discovery that established a permanent and valid basis for all forms of local anesthesia. This was the discovery by the German chemist Einhorn of a relatively safe derivative of the drug, which was called Novocaine. One of the first surgeons to try the new drug was August Beer, who for years had been experimenting with cocaine as a spinal anesthetic. Now using Novocaine, he found that it worked like magic. It had virtually no toxic effects. With its advent, spinal anesthesia was established overnight as one of the most valuable techniques in the field of surgery. With the appearance of Novocaine, many operations became feasible which before had been ruled out because of the perils of a general anesthetic, and new vistas were opened for surgical exploration.
Medical File, the documented story of the men and women who in hospitals, research centers, and lonely surgeries guard our lives. Listen again next week for another true story from medical file.